In the world of children's literature, few stories have sparked as much debate, devotion, and deep reflection as The Giving Tree. This deceptively simple picture book, published in 1964 by the enigmatic Shel Silverstein, has sold over 10 million copies worldwide and been translated into countless languages. The slender volume, just a few hundred words, accompanied by Silverstein's distinctive line drawings, has found its way onto the bookshelves of celebrities like Oprah Winfrey, who has cited it as one of her all-time favorites, and into countless classroom discussions about love, sacrifice, and environmental stewardship. What makes this seemingly straightforward tale of a boy in a tree continue to resonate nearly six decades after its publication? Perhaps it's the book's remarkable ability to speak differently to readers at different stages of life, offering new layers of meaning with each encounter. At its heart, The Giving Tree explores the profound depths of unconditional love through the relationship between the tree and the boy. In the story's early pages, we witness a beautiful symbiosis. The boy visits the tree daily, transforming her leaves into crowns, climbing her sturdy trunk, swinging joyfully from her branches, and feasting on her apples. When exhaustion overtakes him, he rests peacefully in her protective shade. This mutual exchange represents love in its purest form. The tree provides sustenance, play, and comfort, while the boy offers companionship and appreciation. Their early relationship exemplifies the innocent joy of childhood, where love flows freely without expectation or condition. The tree's love manifests as boundless generosity, extending far beyond material offerings. She never hesitates when the boy makes requests, never calculates what she might receive in return, and never questions the growing magnitude of his demands. Her identity becomes inextricably linked with her ability to fulfill the boy's needs and desires, reflecting the way many caregivers define themselves through their capacity to provide. And "the tree was happy" becomes a poignant refrain throughout the narrative. Her fulfillment derives entirely from giving, even as each gift diminishes her physical form. This selflessness mirrors many human relationships: parents who sacrifice careers for children, friends who give their last dollar without expectation, partners who prioritize each other's happiness above their own, and grandparents who empty retirement accounts to fund grandchildren's education. Yet Silverstein introduces subtle complexity through the boy's responses and evolving relationship with the tree. While he loves the tree in the beginning, expressing joy and gratitude through laughter and play, his expressions of appreciation diminish as he ages. The tree's gifts become increasingly expected rather than celebrated. From apples sold for profit, to branches used for building, and finally her trunk for a boat. This evolution raises profound questions about the nature of love itself. Is true love measured by what we give or what we receive? Does love require reciprocity to remain healthy? Can complete selflessness lead to enabling destructive behavior? The tree never wavers in her devotion, despite receiving increasingly less in return, challenging readers to examine their own relationships and the balance between giving and taking. The story ultimately presents a paradox of love that has sparked decades of discussion and debate among readers of all ages. Is the tree's unconditional giving a beautiful ideal of sacrificial love, or a troubling model of self-destruction and codependency? Does her happiness in giving represent the pinnacle of selfless love, or does it reflect an unhealthy loss of self? The complexity deepens when considering cultural contexts. Some societies celebrate self-sacrifice as the highest form of love, while others emphasize the importance of maintaining healthy boundaries. Perhaps Silverstein's genius lies in refusing to provide a definitive answer, instead inviting readers to find their own truth within this deceptively simple tale and contemplate the nature of love in their own lives. Time flows relentlessly through The Giving Tree, transforming both protagonists in profound ways. The narrative spans the boy's entire lifetime, from carefree childhood through ambitious young adulthood into middle age and finally to his elderly years. With each stage comes evolving needs, desires, and priorities that fundamentally alter his relationship with the tree. The story's opening establishes a timeless quality. Once there was a tree who loved a little boy, yet immediately begins marking the passage of years. We witness the boy's daily visits, the seasonal cycles of apple gathering, the changing patterns of play. Then comes the first significant temporal shift. But time went by, and the boy grew older. This simple statement heralds a fundamental transformation in their relationship. As the boy matures, his visits become less frequent, his requests more substantial. No longer satisfied with simple pleasures like climbing and playing, he seeks money, a house, a boat, material possessions that reflect his changing priorities. The tree, meanwhile, remains rooted in place, her identity fixed even as she diminishes physically. Her love remains constant while everything around her changes. Silverstein employs visual storytelling to reinforce this theme. The tree's physical transformation, from full, vibrant foliage to stripped branches to a mere stump, provides a poignant visual metaphor for the passage of time. The boy's evolution from child to hunched elderly man similarly marks time's progression. These visual cues create a powerful contrast. While the boy moves forward through life stages, the tree's journey is one of reduction and loss. The story's temporal structure creates a profound sense of inevitability. Each separation between the boy and tree grows longer, each return finding both protagonists more changed. This pattern mirrors human experience, the childhood home that seems smaller when revisited as an adult, the parent who appears suddenly aged after a long absence, the friend whose life has taken an unexpected direction. Through this lens, the giving tree becomes a meditation on how relationships evolve, sometimes painfully, as time passes and circumstances change. The Giving Tree presents one of literature's most stark examinations of the dynamics between giving and taking. Throughout the narrative, the relationship follows a consistent pattern. The boy expresses a need or desire, the tree offers a solution that requires her own sacrifice, and the boy accepts without hesitation. This unbalanced exchange becomes increasingly pronounced as the story progresses. In the beginning, the relationship appears somewhat reciprocal. The boy takes the tree's apples and plays among her branches, but he also provides companionship and appreciation. The boy loved the tree, and the tree was happy. This initial balance soon shifts, however, as the boy's requests require greater sacrifices from the tree while he offers less in return. When the boy returns as a young man seeking money, the tree offers her apples to sell. When he returns wanting a house, she gives her branches. When he desires a boat, she surrenders her trunk. With each interaction, the tree gives a more essential part of herself while receiving nothing tangible in return. Her only compensation is the brief presence of the boy and the knowledge that she has helped him. And the tree was happy, but not really. This imbalance raises uncomfortable questions about exploitation. Is the boy taking advantage of the tree's generosity? Does he even recognize the magnitude of her sacrifices? The narrative offers no clear condemnation of his behavior. He doesn't force or manipulate the tree. He simply accepts what is freely offered. Yet his unquestioning acceptance suggests a troubling entitlement, a belief that the tree exists primarily to serve his needs. The dynamic also reveals the potential dangers of excessive giving. With each sacrifice, the tree diminishes herself until she becomes a mere stump, unable to provide the shade, fruit, and protection that once defined her. Her identity becomes so thoroughly wrapped in giving that she apologizes when she has nothing left to offer. "I am sorry, I have nothing left to give you." This self-negation suggests that giving without limits can lead to self-destruction. Yet, the story resists simple moral judgments. The tree's giving brings her genuine joy, even as it diminishes her physically. The boy's taking allows him to build a life and eventually return to the tree in his old age. Perhaps Silverstein is suggesting that giving and taking exist on a spectrum, with healthy relationships finding balance between selflessness and self-preservation. Many readers interpret the giving tree as a parable about parenthood, seeing in the tree's selfless giving a reflection of parental sacrifice. This reading finds powerful resonance in the narrative's progression and emotional undertones. The early relationship between tree and boy mirrors the nurturing bond between parent and young child. The tree provides sustenance through her apples, safety through her sturdy branches, comfort in her shade, just as parents meet their children's basic needs. The boy's playful exploration of climbing, swinging, and hiding parallels a child's developmental stages, all supported by the tree's patient presence. As the boy grows older and his visits become less frequent, we see the bittersweet reality of children growing independent. But time went by, and the boy grew older, and the tree was often alone. This simple statement captures the poignancy of empty nests and children moving away. The tree waits eagerly for the boy's return, just as parents often find themselves counting days until holidays or visits when their adult children will come home. The tree's progressive sacrifices, her apples, branches, and finally her trunk, mirror the ongoing nature of parental giving. Parents often continue supporting their adult children through financial assistance, housing help, childcare for grandchildren, and emotional support. Like the tree, they give from their own substance, sometimes at significant personal cost. Perhaps most telling is the tree's consistent prioritization of the boy's happiness above her own needs. "Take my apples, boy, and sell them in the city. Then you will have money and you will be happy." This refrain of wanting him to be happy echoes the parental desire to see children thrive, even when their choices differ from what parents might wish. The story's conclusion offers a particularly nuanced view of the parent-child relationship in later life. When the elderly boy returns seeking only a quiet place to sit and rest, the tree, now reduced to a stump, can still meet this need. This final scene suggests the evolving nature of the parent-child relationship across the lifespan, eventually reaching a stage where adult children may seek simpler forms of support and connection from aging parents. Silverstein leaves readers to determine whether this parent-child dynamic represents a beautiful ideal or a cautionary tale. Is the tree's complete self-sacrifice admirable or concerning? Should parents give endlessly to their children, or are boundaries necessary for healthy relationships? The story offers no definitive answers, instead inviting readers to reflect on their own experiences of giving and receiving within family relationships. While the giving tree is often discussed in terms of interpersonal relationships, it also presents a powerful environmental allegory. Published in 1964, just 2 years after Rachel Carson's groundbreaking Silent Spring sparked the modern environmental movement, Silverstein's tale can be read as a prescient commentary on humanity's relationship with nature. The tree represents the natural world, providing resources, shelter, sustenance, and beauty. Initially, the boy's relationship with the tree seems sustainable. He plays among her branches, makes crowns from her leaves, and eats her apples, all renewable activities that don't permanently damage the tree. This harmonious relationship parallels indigenous and traditional approaches to natural resources, taking only what's needed while preserving the source. As the boy matures, however, his demands become increasingly extractive and destructive. He harvests all the tree's apples for profit, cuts her branches for building materials, and ultimately fells her trunk for lumber. Each action permanently diminishes the tree's ability to regenerate and thrive. This progression mirrors humanity's historical relationship with forests and natural resources, moving from sustainable harvesting to commercial exploitation and clear-cutting. The visual transformation of the tree from vibrant living organism to barren stump provides a stark representation of deforestation and environmental degradation, The tree's diminishment happens gradually, one resource extraction at a time, until suddenly little remains, much like the incremental nature of environmental damage that can seem insignificant in isolated instances, but catastrophic in aggregate. Particularly telling is the boy's absence after each major extraction. He takes what he needs and disappears for long periods, showing no concern for the tree's recovery or sustainability. This pattern reflects humanity's historical tendency to exploit natural resources in one area before moving on to fresh territory, without consideration for regeneration or long-term consequences. The story's conclusion offers a complex environmental message. The boy returns as an old man to rest on the stump, suggesting humanity's ultimate dependence on nature even after exploiting it. The tree, despite being reduced to a fraction of her former self, still provides what service she can. This ending can be read either as a warning about the limited services degraded ecosystems can provide, or, more optimistically, as a testament to nature's resilience and continued importance even in diminished form. Silverstein offers no explicit environmental moral, leaving readers to draw their own conclusions about sustainable resource use, the intrinsic value of nature beyond its utility to humans, and our responsibility to preserve natural systems for future generations. Beneath its simple narrative, The Giving Tree explores profound spiritual themes that resonate across religious and philosophical traditions. The tree's selfless giving evokes concepts of sacrifice, selflessness, and finding meaning through service that appear in many spiritual frameworks. The tree's progressive self-sacrifice, giving her apples, branches, and ultimately her trunk, parallels religious concepts of selfless love. In Christian tradition, this evokes Christ's sacrifice and the biblical principle that greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. In Buddhist philosophy, it reflects the practice of dana, generosity, and the release of attachment to self. In Hindu thought, it suggests karma yoga, the spiritual path of selfless action without attachment to results. Throughout the story, the tree finds joy and purpose in giving, and the tree was happy. This suggests a spiritual principle found across traditions, that meaning and fulfillment come through service to others rather than self-gratification. The tree's identity is fundamentally tied to her ability to provide for the boy, reflecting the spiritual concept that we discover our true selves through giving rather than accumulating. The story also explores spiritual questions about attachment and impermanence. The tree remains emotionally attached to the boy despite his long absences, demonstrating both the beauty and suffering that can come from deep attachment. Her physical transformation, from vibrant tree to bare stump, offers a meditation on impermanence and the Buddhist concept that suffering comes from clinging to what inevitably changes. The boy's journey can be read as a spiritual allegory as well. His journey from childlike joy and simple pleasures to materialistic pursuits, money, house, boat, to eventually seeking only a quiet place to sit and rest, parallels spiritual narratives of the soul's journey, from innocence through worldly ambition and eventually to a return to simplicity and contemplation. The final scene, with the elderly boy sitting quietly on the tree stump, evokes spiritual concepts of coming full circle and finding peace in simplicity. After a lifetime of striving and accumulating, he returns to the tree seeking only rest, suggesting a spiritual homecoming or recognition of what truly matters. Silverstein leaves these spiritual dimensions open to interpretation. Is the tree's complete self-sacrifice a spiritual ideal or a warning against self-negation? Does the boy's return represent spiritual awakening or merely physical exhaustion? The story's ambiguity allows readers to find reflections of their own spiritual questions and traditions within its simple framework. The Giving Tree offers a rich psychological exploration of how identities form and evolve through relationships. Both main characters undergo profound psychological journeys that reflect universal human experiences of attachment, separation, identity formation, and aging. The tree's psychology centers on her identity as a giver. From the beginning, she defines herself through her relationship with the boy and her ability to meet his needs. "Come, boy, come and climb up my trunk and swing from my branches and eat apples and play in my shade and be happy." Her self-concept is entirely relational. She exists to provide for the boy, and her happiness derives from fulfilling this role. This mirrors psychological theories about caretaker identities, where self-worth becomes contingent on being needed by others. As the boy's visits become less frequent, the tree experiences loneliness and longing. But time went by, and the boy grew older, and the tree was often alone. This poignantly captures the psychological challenge of attachment and separation. The tree has formed her identity around a relationship that is changing beyond her control. Her consistent offering of herself when the boy returns suggests an anxious attachment style, where she gives increasingly more in hopes of maintaining the connection. The boy's psychological journey follows the classic developmental arc from childhood dependence through adolescent separation, adult individuation, and eventually elder integration. As a child, he engages in play and exploration, using the tree as both a secure base and a launching pad for discovery. His adolescent and adult phases show increasing separation and focus on external achievements, money, a home, travel, reflecting the psychological drive toward independence and identity formation separate from early attachments. Particularly revealing is the boy's consistent pattern of taking what he needs and leaving. This behavior suggests a psychological stance of entitlement combined with avoidant attachment. He returns to the tree only when he needs something, showing little awareness of her as a separate entity with needs of her own. This pattern mirrors common psychological dynamics in human relationships, where early caregiving patterns can establish lifelong tendencies toward either secure or insecure attachment styles. The story's conclusion offers a psychological resolution of sorts. The elderly boy, having completed his life journey, returns seeking only a quiet place to sit and rest. This suggests a psychological coming to terms with mortality and a return to simpler needs after the ambitious striving of adulthood. The tree, though physically diminished, finds fulfillment in still being able to provide. And the tree was happy. This final scene can be read as representing psychological integration, both characters accepting the limitations of age and finding connection within those constraints. Through these psychological dimensions, The Giving Tree invites readers to reflect on their own patterns of giving and taking, their attachment styles, and how their identities have been shaped by significant relationships throughout life. The conclusion of The Giving Tree offers perhaps its most powerful and nuanced message through a scene of striking simplicity. After following the boy's journey from childhood through the ambitious pursuits of adulthood, we encounter him as an elderly man returning to the tree one final time. This closing chapter provides a meditation on aging, life's circular nature, and finding peace in life's final stages. When the aged boy returns, both he and the tree have been transformed by time. The once vibrant tree is now a stump. The once energetic boy is now too old and sad to play. This parallel diminishment creates a poignant symmetry. Both have lost their former capabilities. Both bear the marks of time's passage. The tree's apology, "I am sorry, boy, but I have nothing left to give you," reflects the vulnerability that often accompanies aging, the sense that one's ability to contribute has diminished. Yet this final encounter reveals a profound shift in the boy's needs and desires. Unlike his previous visits, when he sought material goods, apples to sell, branches for a house, a trunk for a boat, he now seeks only a quiet place to sit and rest. This evolution reflects the common human journey from material ambition to simpler needs in later life, a recognition that after decades of striving, what matters most may be connection, peace, and rest. The tree's response, well, an old stump is good for sitting and resting, carries multiple layers of meaning. There's acceptance of her changed state, recognition that she still has value despite her diminishment, and joy in being able to meet the boy's needs one final time. This mirrors the psychological task of late life, finding meaning and purpose even as physical capabilities decline. The boy sitting down on the stump creates a circle of return. He began his life playing around the tree and now completes it resting upon what remains of her. This circular structure suggests life's completion, the return to simplicity after complexity, and perhaps even hints at mortality, the final rest that awaits us all. And the tree was happy. The story's final line takes on new depth in this context. Earlier in the story, this refrain often carried a note of self-deception or wishful thinking. Now it suggests a more genuine contentment. The tree has given everything, the boy has completed his journey, and they find a final moment of connection that satisfies them both. This conclusion offers no easy answers about whether the tree's sacrifices were worth it or whether the boy should have taken so much. Instead, it presents a moment of acceptance and peace that transcends these questions. Through this deceptively simple ending, Silverstein invites readers to contemplate their own life journeys, the circular nature of human experience, and what truly matters when life reaches its final chapters.